second hour of the Bible study. Numbers are 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727. Whenever Pastor Tom Reich comes, we usually wind up talking finances and things. That's his area of expertise. He is president of the LCMS Foundation. That is the department in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod that handles investments. All those big financial words that I don't know. It's not my area of expertise. Endowments. You handle endowments, Tom?
We do.
Oh, yeah.
Very important.
Give me some big financial words for what you do here.
Loss, we try to prevent those. That's a gain, we try to get those.
That's a good thing. Yeah, I know those words. So I don't know, the last time you were here, it doesn't seem to me that, at least in my memory, that we were in the depths of this economic recession the last time you were here. Maybe we were on the verge, but I don't remember us talking.
I don't remember the last time I was here either, yeah.
When recession happens, when the economy contracts,
mm-hmm.
it affects everybody.
It does.
Is it like your worst nightmare, or is it something that doesn't necessarily affect you maybe as much as other sectors of the economy? How hard have you been hit?
Well, that's a really great question. There's probably two aspects to that. One is we help develop gifts to support ministries throughout the country. In fact, last year, over 600 ministries received a gift of one kind or another through the foundation, including KFUO, as you know.
Yeah.
And we had expected, this is always an interesting prediction, will giving, charitable giving, fall off during a recession, or will it stay the same, or will it increase? And charitable institutions throughout the country, of which there are now hundreds of thousands of them,
hundreds of thousands.
Oh, my gosh, yeah, it's unbelievable how many small and big 501c3s, which is the IRS designation for an organization that is able to receive charitable gifts. It's amazing how many of those there are. And across the country, charitable giving has fallen off. It's not uncommon in the church to see charitable giving increase somewhat in the church, and that was studied during the Great Depression in the 30s, that actually per capita giving amongst church members went up, different day and time, of course, but at the foundation, we have actually seen a slight increase in all gifts given through the foundation over against last year. It's not all given in the right places, meaning some ministries suffer more than others, and that's an ongoing challenge. But overall, direct gifts that benefit ministry today and planned gifts that benefit ministry in the future are up for us over fiscal year 2008.
Do you have a supposition as to why giving would go up in an economic downturn?
Yeah, right. Yeah, there's lots of suppositions that one might instinctively go to, and research bears these out in many cases. Particularly is in the congregations a sense of this is what's really important to us. People who can't give because they've lost their job, other members recognize that and step up in their giving at times. A way of giving support to the community. The work of the church is very much valued by the members of the congregations, just as are other ministry efforts. So I would say all of those work to help giving increase in certain cases amongst members of churches and congregations in particular.
Now, you've been a parish pastor. Is the same thing true for parishes, or is that just a completely different situation?
Right, that's a mixed bag there, but parishes in general experience this as well, that people do recognize the value of their congregation and work to support it during times of recession. Those who have lost the ability to give as they once did because they've lost their job are often offset by others who pick that slack up. In addition, in the congregations I served, and I'm sure this is a case where you attend church as well, when people lose their job, sometimes the congregation rallies to help individuals with their health insurance and their maybe day-to-day living expenses for a time. So lots of dynamics going on in a recessionary environment that lead people to put their shoulder to the wheel and help out. Sometimes the congregation, and I would expect in areas that have really been devastated by recession, just can't get over the hump. We are hearing stories now, for example, in Michigan of unemployment, which is well into the double digits. I don't know this for a fact, but I would imagine there are congregations that even the best intentions and the best work still leaves that church with some difficult choices to make. But in other congregations, we are also hearing that, in fact, giving is above what it was in previous years because there's this sense of participation.
Let's not assume anything here for the person who has just joined us and they hear, this is Tom Reese, president of the LCMS Foundation. They don't know what that means. It's not a term that they're familiar with from perhaps their own Lutheran church. In a paragraph, what is it that the foundation spends most of its time doing?
Right. Oh, that's great. The mission of the foundation is linking Christians with giving opportunities. And that is that we promote the ability and the facility for individual Christians to support the ministries they care about with their financial gifts. You might say, well, isn't that a given? Well, it is, but the foundation was established originally to help individuals with what we might call extraordinary gifts. If someone wants to benefit a ministry such as KFUO with a gift out of their estate plan, for example, that takes some effort to put that planning together. You don't just, drop over dead and say, gee, I wish I'd have done that. It's too late then. Mm-hmm. And so the foundation really has helped tens of thousands, probably hundreds of thousands over the years, to create those kinds of estate plan gifts that will benefit ministries both now and in the future. So we do that. And then oftentimes, Chuck, as you mentioned endowments in the beginning, sometimes people leave gifts that they would like to have be ongoing. And those can take the form of trusts or annuities or estates or endowments that provide an ongoing benefit to ministry. And the foundation manages those investments, not itself, but using its investment advisors and its investment managers to help those continue into the future.
Let's separate those three terms out here for a moment. And you got to remember, I'm not a financial guy. If I'm at a voters meeting and we're talking about budget and finance and that kind of stuff, I just check out until they move on to the next thing. And I look over across the pews and see if the bankers are in the meeting. And if they are, then I thank God for them. And I figure if something doesn't add up, they'll catch it.
There you go.
What is a layman's term? What is a trust?
Good question. A trust is an instrument that an individual establishes to benefit someone else. And usually a trust that we work with is a temporary trust because when that benefit is given to someone else, it also includes benefit that goes to a ministry. So I want to give you just one real good example. A person can establish a trust under the IRS rules today with a 20-year time horizon. If I do that and my wife and I do that and then we die, that trust can provide an income to our children for up to 20 years. Which is a nice thing. After the 20-year period is up, then the remaining value of that trust goes to the ministry that we choose. So if I chose to designate the LCMS Foundation or KFUO as the ministry I would like to have benefited, then the residual value of that trust would go to the ministry. So that really is a long-term plan, isn't it? That's at least a 20-year vision. But that's the kind of thing that a trust does.
Is that something that you set up in addition to a will or in place of a will?
That's great. Correct. No, it's in addition to a will. And a will simply directs the flow of your assets after death. But a trust is one specific vehicle, if you will, for taking that flow and making what you want to have happen.
Now, the second one, you done there?
Yep, done with that one.
The second one is annuity.
Annuity is somewhat similar to a trust, except annuities don't have that time horizon that goes on after death. And so with an annuity, if I want to set up a charitable gift annuity, and let's say I want to do that with $20,000, I purchase the annuity, if you will, or I make the charitable contribution that sets up the annuity. I get a tax deduction for that. In addition to that, then I and my wife, if I wish, gets a payout from that annuity until I die, And then the residual value of that annuity goes to the ministry that I care about or the ministry that I name. So similar to a trust, doesn't have the same longer-term flexibility after death that a trust would have.
And the third thing you said was an endowment.
Right, and an endowment is something that the donor sets up and then doesn't get a benefit out of, and can set that up either during her life, his or her lifetime, or, you know, to be set up after death. And the endowment is an investment of financial assets that provides an income stream to a ministry in perpetuity. And that will go on until Christ comes again in most cases, especially in permanent endowments, obviously.
So I'm guessing that a young person or a young couple couldn't care less about this conversation. Now, this is all for people who are middle-aged or advanced in age.
Mostly, especially when you're talking about real young people, which is a distant memory for you and me,
mm-hmm.
like when
20s.
We were 20s. Yeah. Yeah, they would not be thinking about this in general. But it, especially with the professional opportunities that a lot of young people have today, and Christian young people who perhaps are two-income families, and both have college degrees, both have been working hard to advance their careers, it doesn't take long when assets can accumulate at a fairly rapid clip. And a charitable giving component of anybody's assets is not a bad thing to be thinking about, even as early as the late 30s, early 40s. We have some enormously inspiring examples of donors, Lutheran donors, who are in those age categories that love the Lord, love stewardship, and have already begun.
Any of them off the top of your head that you can talk about? Can you inspire me here for a moment?
No, of course, can't give any names, but people that, you know, both thinking of one family in a different part of the country, both husband and wife are CPAs, and CPAs, if they stick with it, can make a pretty good living. They absolutely love world mission. They're committed to bringing the gospel to other countries and have visited other countries
mm-hmm.
In their already in their lifespan to see what's going on, which in turn inspires them to want to be able to do more. They understand the financial aspects of it, and, for example, a relatively modest gift to support the work of the church in Vietnam, for example, can go a long way because money goes very far in that country right now. And in this case, they're setting aside money to help in the areas of Kyrgyzstan and Kazakhstan, which are in Eastern Europe. And a $300 or $500 monthly commitment is what they're doing right now, in addition to some larger gifts, and supports the work of mission in those parts of the country, of that country. So they find this to be enormously rewarding themselves because they've seen what it does. And they also understand the joy of giving. And that, you know, that's just one example.
So out of every 10 people that contact the foundation to talk about the services that you provide, how many of the 10 call up and say, I'd like to talk to somebody about an annuity? As opposed to how many of the 10 call up and say, I'd like to do something, but I don't even know where to start.
Okay, yeah. The majority of the, and not, we don't just sit by the phone and wait, of course, either, because this is a challenging area of work and we have to be proactive. We hold congregational information sessions. We have programs that help congregations develop their own efforts at this method, develop their own efforts at helping people develop longer-term gifts. So it's it has to be very proactive. Most people, what we find, have an idea of ministries that they want to support. So it's not like we're doing a lot of going out there and saying, hey, here's a catalog of things. Would you like us to help you decide? So that's a starter. Then they oftentimes, if they're calling us, have some idea of what they want to accomplish, but probably don't know all the vehicles that are available to make that happen. And that's where they want to know, what are the tax advantages of an annuity versus a trust? What are the advantages? Because, you know, they all want to remember their family. That's natural. But how can I remember my family and the ministry I care about so that we have a way of using our assets in a God-pleasing, you know, and self-satisfying way that benefits both our kids, our grandchildren, and the ministries that we care about.
How much advice are you called upon to offer? You know, you can take an approach where you talk to somebody, they explain their circumstances, their situation, and then you can say, well, here are two, three, or four, I'll use the term products, I don't know if that's the right term or not.
Not a bad term. Mm-hmm.
That fits your situation. Let me know what you want to do. And then there is, I think that this product is the best for you. That's when you start to advise somebody, perhaps influence their thinking in a certain direction. Do you do that, or do you like to refrain from that, let the person examine the products and make their own minds up?
Yeah, that's a great question. The whole process for us begins when we sit down with people that would like our help, and we do what's called an inventory. And that begins with their assets, developing a personal balance sheet, and then their interests, what ministries do they care about, their children, their desires for supporting family members and that kind of thing. And getting a little bit of a those initial interviews are important because it gives the gift planning counselor a chance to understand their situation. Everybody's situation is unique. After that, the gift planning counselor will come back with usually two or three suggested models. And those models show how these assets could flow through an estate plan to accomplish the desires of the individuals. And so we do advise, but we don't limit ourselves to, well, here's the plan, this is what we think you should do. We do develop a number of models. Obviously, 10 models would be too many. Everybody would be confused at that point.
Overwhelmed.
Yeah, but two or three seems to be the working situation. And this happens over a fairly long process. It can be a year, 18 months from when we first talk to someone to when they finally establish a plan. When we give these models to people, they are to take those models to their own attorney and their own financial advisor. We don't provide that and don't want to do that because they want to work with the people they respect and love. Our foundation has some tremendous professional staff, including two very qualified attorneys on the staff. And our attorneys often consult with the financial advisors or the attorneys of the donors. Our attorneys don't talk to the donors themselves about their plan. That's really not their role. But they will consult with their own advisors because many times even attorneys and financial advisors don't have a strong charitable giving background themselves. So the foundation provides that real strong service to the those who are in the business, if you will. But when it's all said and done, some kind of a plan is in place. It's not irrevocable, usually. There are parts of it that might be irrevocable, but most people leave themselves a little flexibility. You know, you get to a certain point, you don't want too much flexibility because, like all of us, we're probably going to lose our mind sooner or later.
Yeah.
And when that day comes, then it's really too late to make any changes. But for someone like myself, I'm in my 50s and have a plan in place. My plan, if God so permits me to live into my 70s or 80s, is going to be different then than what it is now, I'm sure.
So are you a kind of guy that even when you were in the parish and not necessarily working finances the way you are now, were you the kind of guy that always sort of paid attention to what the American economy was doing? And what I'm asking you to do, if you have enough memory, how bad is the current recession?
Yeah. Well, I didn't pay attention to this much through my upbringing, I can tell you a little story quickly, which I really find amazing. When I was a kid, I was interested in stewardship already as a kid. It was inbred in me. It's a spiritual gift. And maybe a spiritual curse.
When you say inbred, do you mean you got that from God or that your parents disciplined you?
Got it from God, and I observed it in my parents. My parents never sat down with me and said this is what they should do, but my parents were, my father was a pastor, my mom was a homemaker and then went back to work, and they always had a stewardship life. I'm talking financial stewardship mm-hmm. now. They had a broader stewardship life. But I've often told the story, my parents lived out of envelopes, basically. Mom had six or seven or eight envelopes in the pantry drawer, and there was cash in those envelopes, and one of them was marked church, cash went into that after the paycheck was cashed and then went to the offering plate.
Mm-hmm.
So I observed that as a child. I observed that people gave in church. And I always wanted to give. It's crazy. I don't remember a time when I didn't want to do that. But I didn't know much about finance or economics all through my high school, college years, into the seminary. Graduate from the seminary, first call as an assistant pastor up in Minnesota. Meet a guy named Ernie Knutson, who's been the treasurer of the church for 25 years. And I fell in love with Ernie Knutson.
Hmm.
He showed me what double entry bookkeeping is all about. And I'm going, where has this been all my life? I love this. Now, you tell me how many pastors, you know, go into a parish and fall in love with double-entry bookkeeping.
Not very many, I don't think.
Well, this alone must prove that there is a God.
Because there's no Greek or Hebrew in double-entry bookkeeping,
that's right,
is there?
That's right. That's exactly right. And so, you know, make a long... Well, I've already made a short story long, but my next call is down to Concordia College in St. Paul, Minnesota, as an assistant to the president there, who happens to be a pastor, but also is a financial genius. And there's lots of good, strong financial discipline on that campus. And I got exposed to the world of finance in a professional way and was so moved that I decided to go back to school and earn a degree in finance, which I did. And so God has just put together a strange group of talents and interests in me, just as he does in all people, that I have followed ever since. So that's kind of the background of me and economies and finance. Now, when you talk about the depth of this recession, the depth of the recession is similar to what we experienced in 1974, when those of us who were around then recall the oil embargo that really triggered the recession in those days. That came along around 71, 72, and we were all waiting in lines to buy gas, and when you finally got to the pump, you could buy $5 worth. And gasoline had gone from, I think it was like 30 cents a gallon to into the 70 cents a gallon. That's a crushing blow to an economy. In addition to that, then, the stock market, really plunged, as it has done in the last, 18 months. And, recession occurred, which is negative growth, GDP growth in the country. It's interesting, I mentioned this the other day, actually in a chapel service that I conducted, that President Obama has been behind lots of government intervention today in this recession. President Nixon was behind all kinds of government intervention.
Wage and price controls.
You got that right. Yeah, yeah. And just things that you almost consider irrational,
mm-hmm,
from an economic standpoint were going on back then, just as I think this government spending is a little irrational at this point, and most observers would say that. So we kind of have been through a bad time in the 70s, and we're going through a bad time right now.
Well, when we come back on the other side of the break, from your personal perspective, as a professional and as an investor, as a giver,
yeah,
is this a recession where... You say, just wait it out. That's usually what happens when something backs up like this. Most of the time, it's, wait it out, it'll come back. Or is it bad enough that people really need to be examining the way they've got things set up and maybe on this occasion need to do some things differently? We'll talk about that on the other side of the break. Tom Reese is here, president of the LCMS Foundation, and we'll be right back.
We no longer can visit the temple of God in which God dwells. Where today do we go to find God? The Sunday School lesson talking about the workers building the temple after their return from exile explains how we today can also communicate with God. That is the subject of the next Law and Gospel.
Listen to Law and Gospel with Tom Baker, weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on AM 850 KFUO.
Concordia Seminary St. Louis is pleased to announce its Summer Carillon Recital Series. Guests are invited to bring lawn chairs, blankets, and picnics to enjoy in the main quad or on the seminary grounds near Luther's statue. They go from 7 to 8 p.m. on Tuesday evenings in June. There will be an opportunity to meet the Carillonneur after the concert. Concordia Seminary is at 801 Seminary Place in Clayton. If you'd like more information about the Carillon Recital Series, contact Concordia Seminary.
What do the planetary rings tell us about creation? Find out next on today's Creation Moment. And now, here's our Creation Moment host, Ian Taylor.
Space probes have now reached the furthest point of our solar system, and we have learned more about the outer planets in 24 hours than astronomers learned in the past century. For example, we have learned that all five of our outer planets are surrounded by rings. Apart from being quite beautiful, planetary rings are truly a wonder. The rings are only inches thick and comprised of dust and ice in neat bands. It is a very unlikely and unstable structure. Every astronomer knows that the forces of the solar wind, of gravity, and the unavoidable laws of physics should have destroyed a planetary ring in less than a million years. But at the same time, astronomers believe that the solar system is billions of years old. How can this be? To save the situation, astronomers have theorized that there must be small shepherding satellites, which help hold the rings together for long periods of time. Well, they have found satellites around Saturn, and they believe they may be the shepherding satellites. But now, an exhaustive study of Voyager 2's data from Uranus has shown perfect rings without any shepherding satellites. This is held to be a real mystery. Yet, there is no mystery if the Bible is an accurate history of the entire creation, starting at the beginning, not billions, but only thousands of years ago.
For a free copy of our Creation Resource Catalog, visit our website at creationmoments.com or call us toll-free at 1-800-42-BIBLE. And be sure to join us next time for another Creation Moment, proclaiming evidence of God's truth.
AM 850 KFUO, faithfully proclaiming the gospel for 85 years.
On the theme of music, we had a number of well-known performers. One very fine organist, I'm sure you'll remember, Harvey Wangren. Remember him? Harvey was quite an accomplished musician. He even played for, Elmer helped me out, for Lyceum programs, didn't he, at the SEM?
Yes, Harvey used to take that Wangren organ, which was made by one of his ancestors, and there's a memorial in the seminary chapel, and on Lyceum nights, he would frequently play before the performance began. But you know what Harvey did? He had crawled up there in the chambers of the organ, and he put in a vibrato of his own, because Harvey liked theater-type music.
Yeah.
And he made that Wangren sound like a Wurlitzer. You said he played well. He was a good musician. Well, the classical musicians around here didn't like it. But for the group that came out for Lyceums, they just loved Harvey's recitals.
Voices of the past calling us forward into the future.
(505) 780-5150-1-800-730-2727 If you'd like to join our conversation here, if you want to raise a question that doesn't have anything to do with finance, Pastor Reese has parish pastoral experience. He can comment on that. He can talk about what did you call that double entry
bookkeeping.
I can't even begin to ask a question about that. I don't even know what that is. What is that?
Debits and credits. Yeah.
Oh, double entry.
You bet.
Debits and credits. Check.
Something goes in the left column, something else has got to go in the right column. Okay. That's what it's all about.
Well, I know a little bit about that.
There
you
go.
Enough to be dangerous. But you did have parish experience.
Yeah, 12 years as a parish pastor and fourth generation. My father, grandfather, great-grandfather, all pastors. Grew up in the church.
And then you had three girls.
I have three daughters, yep. They're
no
not
boys.
Pastors.
No boys?
No boys.
No boys. How'd that happen?
One of them, their things.
Kind of the end of the line, isn't it? Any of them married pastors?
No, not yet.
Not yet?
Not yet.
Okay, well, there's still that possibility. So we were talking about the depth of this recession. And the question is, given the magnitude of this correction, can I call it a correction? Is this a time when people should be really examining whatever it is they've got set up, looking for some professional advice as to, you know, I set this up 5 years ago, but now because of this economic downturn, maybe it's obsolete or maybe it's not a good fit. Should people be thinking like that, or are you one of those guys who says, the economy will come back, it'll be all right, wait it out, everything will be fine?
Well, yes, those are all good questions. The answers depend on your age, your circumstances. If you're in your 70s, the answer will be different than if you're in your 30s. If your employment is fairly secure, the answer will be different than if you've just lost your job. So everybody has to have some advice and counsel on all of that that tailor to their individual situation. But I will give a few general comments about that. I grew up in Wisconsin, as you know, and now have lived up in Minnesota or been around Minnesota for 30 years. And I noticed the Twins kind of won the series here. I just wanted to mention that.
It's not a sports program.
Anyway, you should have seen the Twin sports writers. They were fawning all over Albert Pujols. I think that guy's unbelievable, and he is unbelievable.
Yeah.
When you drive in the wintertime in Minnesota or Wisconsin and the roads are icy, it's not uncommon for your car to start to slide, especially before the days of anti-lock brakes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I learned to drive. And we were always taught when we were driving, if your car starts to skid, don't jerk back against the skid. In fact, kind of turn into the skid and gradually bring yourself back to a straight line. Hopefully you won't end up in the ditch. And that is absolutely true when it comes to this kind of a critical situation that we're in, is not to overreact to anything that has happened to you. So ideally, if you're an investor, for example, or if you have a 401k, which many people do, or a 403b like we do, Chuck, because we're in a nonprofit, this is the time to continue to contribute to that if you're still employed. Not to stop because the value has gone down. You are buying more shares at lower prices, which will help in the long run for a person who, who is employed and continues to work. And I think most people have gotten that over the years, but when you're in this kind of a situation and you open your statement and you had $80,000 in there and it's now down to $42,000, that's a shock. And so it's important to remind yourself that, boy, this is also an opportunity.
You know how I handle that?
Don't look at the statement.
I don't look at the statement.
Well, there you go. Yeah. But man, oh man, I mean, if you are purchasing, and the way mutual funds work, which are the basis for these kinds of accounts, are they have a net asset value, which is the value of the share that you own in the mutual fund. And if it was at $10 before and you were buying those shares at $10, now you can buy them at $5. That means your $10 buys 2 shares. The question is, how long do you have to wait? And do you believe that 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 40 years from now, things will be better than they are today? And I absolutely believe that, 100%.
As you move around in your business, you work at the International Center.
Of the Lutheran Church in Missouri Synod.
There are a lot of people there, and there are a lot of people with whom you can interact. Which of these two attitudes do you have? Boy, I'm so glad there are so many ignorant people when it comes to finance, because that really gives me job security, gives me something and my colleagues something to do in the future. Or, boy, it's kind of embarrassing how little people know about such an important thing in their lives. Which of those two things do you tend to...
Yeah, there you go. Well, definitely the latter. The more people who are informed and know about finance, basic personal finance in general, and a little bit about global finance, so that they're not startled by it or afraid, the better off we all are. It's an expanding pie, not a limited pie. So, you want people to, especially as a pastor, because individual finance for people, their families' financial situations, the church's financial situations, all can have a rather challenging, can create a rather challenging environment for a pastor. And nothing wrong with many congregations, in fact, are having a personal finance series that they conduct at their churches, connect it to personal stewardship with some biblical principles. It's all a beautiful thing. So we just want to encourage the knowledge base as much as we can.
Do you know who George Soros is?
I do.
That name?
Sure do.
He has a political identity. I don't want to really talk about that. But
right.
He is a fabulously wealthy man. And I heard, I don't know if this is true or not, I heard that he's made something of a killing during this recession. How does a person take advantage of a recession? Is there a smart, shrewd way to do that? Is that ethical to make a killing during a recession?
Well, I don't know what his situation is. George Soros has had his shares of losses, too, over the years, so he's not perfect. Certainly the way to make money, and John Templeton is a real good example, the sainted now John Templeton, his mantra was, when people are afraid is the time to be buying, when people are feeling good, that's the time to be selling. In other words, taking a contrarian view.
Steering into the slide?
Righto. In general, is the proper response. And it's not so much a matter of knowledge then, but emotional equipment for people. Can you stand the fact that, and I've just gone through this myself, I personally tend to buy a lot of individual stocks. I think I'm smarter than the market, which is sometimes a bad thing. And sometimes I am, and sometimes I'm not. But some of these companies which are really solid companies, the value of their shares is so beaten down. It would be like someone, if they were selling a Chevrolet Tahoe, which is a pretty nice vehicle, for $40,000 last year, and now you can get one for $25,000. What's the question?
Mm-hmm.
If they're selling a house in your neighborhood and you're a first-time home buyer for $400,000, and now you can get it for $250,000, what's the question? So those are the kinds of things that, but you could buy that house for $250,000 and then the value could drop to $175,000. Could happen. So it's a matter of emotional equipment so that you know when I got onto the train, whatever the investment train was, if I'm willing to take even more bad news and have planned ahead for that, then I'm in the driver's seat. And that's where people like George Soros and John Templeton and others make money. Because they can be in the driver's seat and they've stiffened themselves to handle those emotional ups and downs.
Whenever there's an economic downturn, particularly a significant economic downturn, all of the buy gold people come out of the woodwork. And there is fear. And they say things like, gold's never been worth zero. It can't completely collapse because it is a precious metal.
Right.
Do you have an opinion about buying gold at this time?
Absolutely. I wouldn't buy gold today or gold shares at all because gold has reached a value. And interestingly, I just read an article on this in the Northwest Airlines magazine that they put in the little pocket,
Mm-hmm.
I was on a plane a couple of days ago, and that was a big article on buying gold. The author agreed. He said, it's up around $1,050, $1,100 an ounce. Historic highs. Not the time to be buying gold. Any kind of investment program, though, does have to have a diversification issue, a factor in it. And it's good to be diversified into a variety of investments. For most people, the biggest investment is their house. It's a very solid investment, always has been. And for most people, that's still working out pretty well. After that comes the financial assets and putting them in mutual stock funds, mutual bond funds, possibly a little bit into gold, but gold would never be a big part of anybody's portfolio, nor would any other kind of commodity. That kind of diversification can be good. Now is not the time to diversify into gold. Now is the time to diversify into equities. No question. Just give you another little thing that might be of interest to you and perhaps your listeners is now is kind of the time to be steering away from municipal bonds and particularly U.S. Treasuries because they have been bid up so high as well that there's not much room for them to go up anymore. And most likely the direction will be down for U.S. Treasuries, whereas corporate bonds are down as a group. And this is a good time to be looking at those.
So in watching, I do pay attention to news. Some people never watch the news. They watch the situation comedies and that couple of cop dramas maybe, and that's what they do. I do pay attention to the news. And the claim is pretty much across the board that the federal government of the United States is poised to spend more money and tax more money or print it or whatever they have to do. than ever before in the history of our country. This is not just a trend. This appears to me to be a milestone. We're going to be doing things differently here in the near future than we have in the past. Has that caught your attention? Are you making any adjustments or thinking things through differently because of the prospect of what are called over the next 10 years trillion-dollar deficits?
Well, it has caught my attention, and I don't like it. I don't know what to do about it, because since I'm a little peon that sits here with you in the radio station, and nobody asks my opinion. The use of public debt is not a bad thing. Has been demonstrated.
Now, what do you mean by the use of public debt?
Well, public debt to encourage...
You mean the taking on of government...
Well, yes, to sell, that's a good question, to sell treasuries or other kinds of public instruments to fund government operations so that the government does not always have, you know, a balanced budget on an annual basis. Not always a bad thing. Certainly, if you're in World War II and you got to have money to save, you know, Western and Eastern civilization, you better sell some bonds. But when you, and if you're coming out of the Depression, and you need to borrow money so that people can have a job, and you give them a shovel to build the Hoover Dam, good thing. But to have a loss of perspective on when, you know, what kind of an environment are we in, and what are the what is the scope of the borrowing that we're doing at this point, that's another question, and that's what worries us as voters. Do our elected officials really have a handle on the scope of the borrowing they're doing in this particular environment? And the taxing for national health insurance is another big issue that's going to be very of great concern. Nobody's in favor nobody's not in favor of every citizen having access to health care. No question about that. But the means to get there and the management of it is another question.
Now, I know a little bit about a lot of things. Don't consider myself to be much of an expert on much of anything, but I have a broad range of experience. Redid some rooms in my house, and driven a few nails in my time, and plumbed a few things. But investments, finance, man, I'm just a big zero on that. Is there a way for a person who you said you had you got a gift?
I guess.
And this is something that, you know, was stimulating to you. Yeah, you went to school to learn about it. Most folks have not walked that path. Is there a way to get in up to your knees on something like this so that you can at least have a discussion with somebody like yourself, so you're not just... It's like, you know, if you go down here to the seminary, you go down to the lunchroom, and all these seminary professors, and they're all talking about intricacies, you know, in Philemon or something like that. And I've had lunch down there before, and I couldn't begin to get into that conversation. It's just at another level, which is the way it feels for me about finance. Is there, like, Finance for Dummies book that you would recommend, or is there a single volume of something that can put a person into a position where he could actually, with confidence, as you do, buy and trade some single stocks and have a feel like, I think I know what I'm doing here.
You bet. And there literally is Personal Finance for Dummies and The Idiot's Guide to Personal Finance. So
take your pick. Are those good?
Terrific.
Really?
Yeah, they're terrific. Yeah. And then there's some spinoffs that come out of those because this is a hot market.
Right.
So if someone really was literally at ground zero, which not people aren't really at ground zero, but if they really want to start from the basics, those two references are not a bad place to start. And I really feel very strongly about Money Magazine and Smart Money Magazine. Really terrific, readable, lots of illustrations of people's real lives that you can start to compare to your own.
Yeah.
And you can go to the library if you want to, although right now, you know, subscription rates aren't that much. I'm not just kidding you here, a couple of texts like you mentioned and reading Smart Money and Money Magazine would be a very rewarding experience for a lot of people.
Since you have the background that you have and three daughters, did you teach your daughters anything as a dad as it pertains to money management that maybe I didn't teach my daughters and my son?
Well, I don't know about that, but I sure did try, and we, you know, they had varying degrees of interest. Now they're all employed. They started to get interested in finance when they got their first real paychecks.
Mm-hmm. That's when people usually pay attention to taxes.
Too. There you go, 15, 16 years old, and they go, wait a minute, I thought I was getting $4.50 an hour, and I'm only getting $3 an hour. What happened to the rest of it?
Yeah.
So then they started to get interested. We really did not give our children everything. My wife and I were just talking about this the other day. She handled the clothing, you know, account, which was good. And she said, girls, you got this much money for whatever you want, and after that, you got to buy everything yourself. It was amazing how the value system changed mm-hmm. when they got that word. And they began to make choices that were in line with what a revenue was available. And so I think just doing that and raising children is the first and most important thing to get them in the groove of spending. And I tried to, of course, encourage giving as well. And have been marginally successful in that, but saving. And one thing I've noticed with my three daughters is now that they're all out of college and all gainfully employed, is they all went into their company's 401k plans right from the get-go. And there's nothing really from a financial standpoint more important than starting that process. So we did, and I was talking to Susie, my wife, a couple days ago, and I said, did I do enough giving them financial information? She said, oh, yeah, I think they're doing really well. So, hope so.
Well, if somebody wanted to, I mean, you're a big shot. You're the president. If somebody called and the foundation said, you know, I heard this Tom Reese guy on the radio. I'd like to find out a few things. Well, we have Bob and we have John and I want to talk to Tom because I heard him on the radio. I liked what he had to say. Will you take that phone call?
Absolutely. Be happy to make time. And I certainly would encourage people to really look into their congregations. I know several congregations, some of the larger ones here in town, St. John's and Ellisville, has just gone through a major effort to have all of its members, you know, have the chance to attend a 5-session personal finance, personal stewardship type of Bible study / class. And
Now, wait a minute.
Community colleges are doing the same thing.
Personal finance Bible study?
Absolutely.
Somebody's thinking, make up your mind, Pastor. You want to talk about personal finance or you want to talk about Bible?
You're right.
How do you connect the two?
Well, we have, this is very interesting because Pastor Wayne Nolhoff, who's the director of the District Congregational Services Department of Stewardship, that's a mouthful.
Mm-hmm.
He has a three-statement vision for a person's stewardship life. Number one, God is owner. Number two, I am steward. Number three, I am accountable. And those three things are so beautiful because while we acknowledge, and that's where we start from the scriptures, is that God is the owner of everything. Psalm 24, the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. That beautiful perspective was what you get in the church, and you're not going to get that from Merrill Lynch. The second beautiful perspective is that I have been chosen by God to be a steward of the assets that I have been given from Him. And what a privilege that is. So we get that image out of the scriptures. Don't get that from Ameriprise. And then the third thing is the accountability piece. And that's not a law. That's really an opportunity. That's a gospel kind of accountability. Sounds a little bit scary.
Oh, it sounded like a law to me.
Yeah, exactly. But it really is an opportunity to make the choices about, I'm not George Soros. I don't have $20 billion. But I am Tom Reese. You know, I am Chuck Rather, and I've got a certain amount of blessings that I can work with, and I'm going to do the best job I can. And if I'm going to do the best job, then I want to use the best tools that are available and are God-pleasing. And I can learn a little bit about that in a Bible study / personal finance class. So I like it.
So if my parish called the foundation and said, hey, we heard about that, what was that, a 5-Sunday Bible study kind of a thing
yeah,
there? Is that going to be biblical stewardship, kind of a philosophical approach, or is it going to be lean in the direction of nuts and bolts, how-to mechanisms that people will learn financial things?
Yep, the answer to that is yes. It will have a biblical grounding, and then it will have some financial discussion in there. I participated in one of these that actually that Thrivent sponsored out in Emmanuel Lutheran Church in St. Charles a year or so ago.
Mm-hmm.
And there were people, there were some young folks that had just gotten married and had a mountain of credit card debt.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some older people. I was probably one of the older ones in there. I'm in my 50s. Few that were older than I was, and lots of people in between. It was great. It was a great environment to discuss these things in the context of the Christian gospel.
So is there a specific person? We're not going to hang this one on you, President Reese. Is there, you know, let's just go right to the manager of the five-session stewardship presentation church. Who do we call?
Well, you can call the LCMS Foundation and ask for either Terry Gertz, who's our Senior Vice President for Gift Planning. He knows a lot about this. A person who reports to him is Blake Tilley, and he's another guy that's just very helpful in matching up congregations with resources. And we can take it from there.
That sounds like a really good idea.
It is a good idea, and it's very, very, very helpful.
Phone number?
I'm going to give you the website because I don't have a phone number committed to memory. Right. Well, let me give you this. Website is lcmsfoundation.org. My phone number, 314-996-1450. My assistant can help you out.
Excellent. So are you, in the minute that remains here, are you encouraged about the future, the near-term future of finance here in America? Or are we still in the clouds, going to be flying in the clouds for a while? How do you see it?
I'm encouraged about the near-term future. I think there's some positive signs in the economy, but I have a job.
Yeah.
And if I didn't, I wouldn't be encouraged. And I'm very empathetic to that because I've sat with lots of people who are in that situation. It's no fun. So we're just hoping that we can get that unemployment rate down. Ben Bernanke, the head of the Fed, thinks that we're coming out of it, and I respect those people. They tend to be pretty neutral instead of biased, politically biased. So hopefully we're going to see some positive signs.
Should people be aware in their congregations of who, not maybe who specifically, but how many job losses there are and doing something about it?
I think so, and that's another area of this that people really need to take stock of that. And sometimes they have to think, maybe I should start floating my resume around because my company looks not so hot. Maybe I should start acquiring some different skills. Just try and be prepared, pay off some credit card debt, save some things, and do the best you can with what you have.
Tom Reese, president of the LCMS Foundation, and a conversation here on finances and giving. Thanks for listening. We'll continue in Leviticus tomorrow here on the Bible Study.
Listen to Chuck Ratherton guests Monday through Friday at this same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the Internet at kfuo.org. For a free copy of The Bible Study, please visit the audio archive section of our homepage. That's kfuo.org. The Bible Study is a broadcast service of Worldwide KFUO.